All right, we are back, and we are joined by the master and the ruler of the world, Sid Vicious. Welcome back to In Your Head.
Thank you, guys, having me. How's it going tonight?
I'm doing good. How's everybody else?
Oh, pretty good.
One inch, how about yourself?
Ah, oh, you know, I'm always up for it.
And our British friend?
It's always a good night when we get Sid Vicious on the line.
Thank you for saying what's a nice comment. I'd like to start real quick by just, I'd like to say hello to a few people out on the West Coast. Joyce, Charlene, and Laura with Psycho Fanatics, and then I'd like to have a shout-out to Jeff and Erica, Psycho Sid Productions. I know at this moment you're probably listening to this, watching VH1 One-Handed Wonders while they're scarfing down some McRib sandwiches. Go, guys. Keep the West Coast down.
I've got to say, you know, we've had a lot of, you know, big-name people on the show, you know, Goldberg and Jericho and Terry Funk, all these people. But every time we have Sid Vicious on, there's like this group of people that really like go crazy, and they're saying, you know, they can't wait to listen to it. And how does that make you feel, you know, knowing that you have like such, you know, a fan base?
Well, this is one of the reasons that I got a little crap from my wife. Where she gave me a little thanks. I'll throw this out there. They call me the scapple, and the reason why is because I cut right through the bullshit. I don't purposely say anything bad about anyone. I try not to be too honest, but I'm maybe a little bit too honest sometimes. And that's the thing I think people get out of me is that I tell the truth, you know, as close as I can without, you know, just give a, you know, a real fair shot out there to everybody. Mm-hmm. And, I, you know, I usually got answer things pretty easily, give people they're listening. I've said our wrestling fans today are so smart. We don't hide anything from these guys. We tell them what they want to, you know, what they're trying to ask us. And when I've done these shows before, I try to at least give someone something of, where they really come out of the conversation and say, man, I got something out of that deal, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I listened to that interview, and I, you know, think about this. It's so hard for us, people like myself who have been in the business, to talk to people, and they ask us a question, and we give them an answer. Now, sometimes, like everything in life, you know, we don't have really – you know, facts about everything, and the wrestling business, you know, not as many facts out there. There's a lot of guesswork. So if you got a fact there once in a while, we know, we like to, I try to push it there or put a thing up. That way people, at least if, and might make sense from somewhere if they see it somewhere down the road on TV or something.
You mentioned about, like, all the fans are a lot smarter and stuff now. Did that ever bother you that, like, some fans know, like, you know, the terms heel and face and kayfabe and all these other terms?
No. I've talked about this before. I was pretty lucky about that. I know I got to be around some real quickly. You know, the first territory I worked with down on Continental was Robert Fuller. He was real open about things. Now, you got to realize he was old school. And I came at the era where old school and new school was sort of meeting. And I wasn't one of those people going, you call it fake, I wasn't going to fight you about it, you know.
Right.
Where some people would. You know? So I was lucky in that point right there. I really got some good education with this business at the right time.
Mm-hmm. We're getting some callers here already. If anybody else wants to call in, it's 1-508-644-8503. And we're going to give away a free Sid Vicious poster tonight to one caller. But you have to ask Sid a question. Don't just call in and say, I want a poster. So we got a Titan on the line.
Hello, Sid.
Hello, Titan.
I was wondering, what is your favorite WrestleMania match?
Oh, man. God, that's a tough one there. I would include myself in something like that because, of course, my favorite WrestleMania would be the one with me and Hogan. That I have to say that was the reason for that for me. That was the first time, guys, that I'd ever been out in front of that kind of numbers of people.
Yeah.
And to me, that, for me, and I know what it's like for a lot of people, that is the biggest payoff you can get. Not financially, but just to know that you had a big part of that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that to me is why that was better than the other WrestleMania from, you know, the other one I was in. Because I was there, I was main event, you know, over 70,000 people. I mean, again, also something that big to let you know how small you really are.
Right.
How different is it wrestling in a big arena compared to, you know, wrestling in a big arena with Hulk Hogan?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I was just wondering, how different is it from wrestling in a huge arena to wrestling in a huge arena and being out there with Hulk Hogan?
Well, that's up to two guys. That you know, for a wrestler, you know, it's so much easier, you know, to have fun out there when the guy you're working with is Hulk Hogan, or you know, say in my situation, I'm a heel, so if I work with the baby face, he's really over. It makes it, you know, 70,000 turn into 150,000 or 20,000 to 50,000. You know, the electricity you get out of it. So, you know, and it's matchups too. And that was a better matchup for me.
Yeah. Do you have anything else, Titan?
Nope.
All right. Thanks for calling in, man.
Thanks for coming on.
You said about, you know, like the big crowd and everything. For you, did you prefer to, like, have the people boo you or cheer you, or didn't it matter as long as, you know, you're getting
honestly, I've never bothered, you know, since I've been in the business to the point to say, you know, came out of Arkansas, Mississippi, and worked for WCW and worked for WWF, where you went in some bigger cities, you know. It never did affect me one way or other. When I was up north and around the Northeast, especially, and some out in California and other places, I was mostly a baby face, and then down south I was a heel. So I've never been like just, you know, so we're lucky that never affected me, and I always was sort of like that. You know, it was a different change of pace instead of being the, you know, same thing all the time.
Mm-hmm. We got Jason on the line.
Hey, Sid, how's it going?
Good, Jason. How are you tonight?
I'm doing all right. Before I ask my question, I just want to say something to you. You worked a main event for WCW at my high school back in 93, and my dad was heckling you, and you turned over to him and said, "Hey, sit down, Pansy." He got hecked the rest of the week for my family. Thank you very much. It was great.
Yeah, that's tough, too. I love messing with the people like that. And, you know, go back for a second. Go off the subject here, but you're talking about the big stage, okay? Now, to me, I could go up to a little place like in Osceola, Arkansas, be in front of 50 people or whatever it is. Much fun doing that, too, is that in front of 70,000 people, because as a performer, you know, I believe I'd be like this as an actor. If I was an actor, I'd want to be on Broadway just as much as the big screen, because this is something I found out in my career. If you can do it on a small scale, you definitely can do it on a big scale. So, you know, 9 times out of 10.
Is that something you really missed when you were out with the injury? Was like the crowd?
Oh, of course you miss that, man. That's I dream about that, guys. I dream about that. You know, that's something I'm gonna you know, fight to my death to get back in the ring and get in front of those people another time. You know, so you know, that's something you just gotta realize. Like I said earlier, that's the deal. You know, that's what we go for. We go for the big crowds. Now I love the little crowds, but I go for the big crowds. That's where I want to be.
Did you have another question, Jason?
Yeah, I wanted to know if you had any good Harvey Whippleman stories.
Man, I've got so many Harvey Whippleman stories. They would just overshadow his book, and the sales of it would go to the negative 12, it'd go to like the negative 60. So I don't want to try to step on any toes over there in Walls, Mississippi with Harvey Whippleman. But no, I tell you, I don't know. I got so many stories about Harvey. You know, Harvey, you got to realize now, here you go. A guy's coming into business. You know, I'm from Arkansas, and I don't know anybody, and I never knew there was wrestling outside of Memphis at this, you know, at this time, other than, you know, the NWA and WWF. I didn't know there were small territories when I first started. So he's coming from the territory up in Portland, and he meets me here at West Memphis, and I follow him down in Alabama. Now, it's the first time on the road, so I've met this guy, and I'm introduced to him. Now, he's old school, okay? So I was introduced to everything at one time, you know, and now, I'm going to tell you, there's a story about Harvey would just go on record, and someone would be like in the, you know, the nicest of stories, and someone would be like something you'd hear in an Alfred Hitchcock movie. Dude, this was fanatic, man. I mean, it was so funny. I look at some of these things, I laugh at this, you know. I mean, I'll give you one, like one time, he's one of these guys, you know, I follow this, you know, I sort of went thinking this was a code he was telling me that we had to live by. So one night, I was asleep on the passenger seat, and I feel the car jerk around, and I look up, and we're off the interstate, we're into a little small town. I go, "What are you doing, man?" He goes, "This motherfucker up here cut me off, man." And I said, "Dude," I said, "man, it's 2 a.m, let's go home." He goes, "No, Sid, let me tell you something, you won't realize this because you just get into the business. You don't fuck with the boys." I said, "Do what?" "You don't fuck with the boys." I went, "Okay, sure." So by the time the guy pulled over, it's this old man and his, like, grandkids, you know. And I said, Bruno, you've been chasing like an 80-year-old man and his grandkid down this road. He just starts snickering. You know, I can't tell you the time. So I'll give you a real quick one. One time when we were at a bar, once in Nashville and once in Memphis, Tennessee, both times it happened like this. So Bruno gets in this argument with this guy about his size. And, you know, me and a couple of guys go down and go, hey, man, don't mess with our buddy. And we're big guys, and he don't mess with him. So Bruno picks on the guy all night long. And he goes, oh, yeah, shut your mouth. And he looks over at us and goes, you will go outside? And the guy goes, no, man, no, no, no. So Bruno went to the bathroom, and he goes to the bathroom. And I tell the dude, I said, man, why are you taking all this crap from me? He goes, man, I thought you guys were going to beat me up because y'all are his friend. I went, no, we're just acting like that. So Bruno comes back, so he gets all cocky. He goes, hey, man, give me a beer, dude. He goes, no, get your own beer. He goes, what, do you want to go outside? And the guy goes, yeah, let's go outside. And he looks at me, and I said, hey, go outside. That's the first time we've done him like that. All the other times we sort of attacked him, you know. But I'll tell you another one real quick. A lot of people know this. I think we were in England, or Ireland. And it's me and Berserker, John Nord, and Mike Rotunda, Steve Lombardi. Now, Steve Lombardi and Bruno hated each other in the beginning. They were both after the same job. And that's to be a stooge, right? Mm-hmm. So they got into a big argument. Bruno did the same thing with Steve. So it got everybody feeling sorry for him. So everybody got on Steve. But that's how their friendship started. You know, just like that. You know, Bruno pulling his weight around with his friends, you know, getting that sympathy deal. And everybody said, don't touch him, Steve, you know. That's how Bruno is. He's just a funny son of a gun.
Good question, Jason. Anything else?
No, thank you very much. It was an honor.
Thanks for calling in, man.
Yep. All right, man.
Area code 281. I'm not sure on the name.
Hello?
Yep. Who is this?
Hi, this is David.
All right. Do you have a question for Sid?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's a great honor to talk to you.
Thank you.
Mr. Udy. And question I have is, one of the most memorable matches I've seen is when Dr. Dredd faced you at the Blackjack Brawl.
Uh-huh.
I think, and the question I had was, did you prefer to be a heel, or did you like the times where they asked you sort of to be like a face or a character? To be like?
No, I made this clear my whole life. I prefer to be a heel. I'll answer real quick for you. A heel can do something no one else can do, and that's receive the greatest form of flattery. You know, Pat Patterson taught me this, and that's to do a job. And no one can, you can't get a bigger form of flattery than that. Babyface doesn't get that flattery, but, you know, you do the job, he doesn't do the job. You know what I mean? So when the match is who does the job is the heel, and the heel's going to get the biggest reaction. I mean, like, they're going to really be happy when he loses. So that's why it's so much fun to be a heel. It's just is.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have any problem doing a job for anybody?
No.
Mm-hmm. I got a question for Sid.
All right, who is this?
My name's Jesse. I'm from New York.
All right, Jesse, what's your question?
Yeah,
I just wanted to ask him if and when he's coming back to work for Vince.
Man, I don't know right now. I honestly haven't heard from those guys, and last time I heard from them, they didn't have anything going on at that time, so that's where I stand right now in that position.
Thanks for calling in,
David. All right,
thanks,
big man.
You're welcome.
Have they gave you any reason, like, why they haven't brought you back?
No, they haven't. I haven't. I'm not going to push them on it, you know.
Right.
The thing is about this guy, this is where I look at myself as a, you know, it's pretty simple mathematics, simple science. I know what I do in this business. They know what I'm able to do, and if they need somebody that's able to do that, they'll call me.
Mm-hmm. We got Laura on the line.
Hi.
Is this one of the Psycho Fanatics?
Thanks.
Yes, it is. How
Thanks
you doing?
For coming on. Good. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing pretty good now that I finally got the computer going. Mm-hmm. It was giving
what's,
me fits
what's your question tonight?
I know I've asked Eric this before, but I wanted to ask you, what did you do before you got into wrestling?
Well, believe it or not, I know it sounds like a corny, stupid story from the South. I was a farmer. Worked on a farm pretty much my whole life, and that's what I did up to get into wrestling.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Me too. That's what was funny. I tell people this really sounds like almost too weird to be true, but that's what it was. I tell people I really didn't know this until I was older, that it was other territories other than the Memphis territory. You know, it's almost like it goes back to the golden days when, you know, New Yorkers didn't know there was other baseballs. You know, there was never no other teams out of the Midwest, and then finally St. Louis came through, and then finally they moved out to California. It didn't exist, you know. So for me, that's the same thing as I didn't know, and I just to go from, you know, working in the field in a tractor to being main event in Madison Square Garden, I don't think people could realize the culture shock that is, and also what accomplishment it is for myself and how I feel about it.
Did anybody in the wrestling business, when they found out like you were worked on a farm, like they ever think, let's give this guy a hillbilly character?
No. Honestly, I knew everybody I talked to who asked me these questions. I told them the same things, but I don't think hillbilly character would fit on me, guys.
No, I don't think so either. I just thought it'd be funny.
But it's a good request. So shut your mouth.
I have a question. Yeah, I'll be asked that probably. That'd be the first thing Vince will say. Said you want to do a farmer gimmick? Yeah, they're like, that's going to sell them tickets.
Coming to the ring, Farmer Sid Vicious. Thanks farmer for calling Sid. In, Laura.
Yeah, Laura.
All right,
talk
bye.
To
you. Good right. talking to you again, too. Bye.
You be good.
Keenan.
Yes, hi. I have a question. Like, was it true back in November you had a tryout with WWE Sid Vicious?
No.
Where you were scheduled to appear in a WWE ring on a pre-taped show?
No.
Not true.
Not and true my, at all.
Where now did you read that, Keenan?
On some old cheesy wrestling gossip site.
All right. I can't believe anything you read on those.
Am well, I would hope, I'd hope at this point, guys, first of all, I'm not saying above things, but I'm above a tryout. Okay.
Right.
I think I could walk to the ring, and this is a old cliche. I could walk to the ring on one leg and do more than most of those guys are fucking doing right now, 15 legs. All right, that simple. So I don't need a tryout. I was just something that just I think I'm above right now.
Right. That'd be kind of an insult.
Well, it would be an insult to just be. Would it be if you went that far to, you know, fuck with me? That'd be just enough for me to say no. I'm not interested. You know what I mean? I don't, now if you want me to go out and run a 40 and do a vertical leap and this and that, show my endurance or my leg strong, yeah, I'll do that. But I've proven, other than the last match I have a law, that I can still work a little bit. I took a student month, was no count. But other than that, guys, I think I've proven I can perform at a still high level.
Yeah.
You know, and I can do what Sid Vicious does, you know.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Keenan?
Yes. Now, I'm still interested in seeing you make a return back to WWE. Do you think WWE is interested in bringing you back, or do you think they're just bluffing?
I don't know, guys. I really don't. I've heard these rumors come to me as quick as they come to everyone else, okay?
Right.
And I don't know who's creating these things. If anybody knows me, I've never turned on the computer one time in my life, okay? That's not my deal. That's not my job, all right? So I don't know who says these things, how they get created. I know there were a couple of stories out at one time about Johnny had met me, and we did talk at Connecticut over a year or so ago, and said, are you ready to do a physical? I said, yeah, and then I heard later that he put on there that I said, no, I wasn't ready to do a physical, and then later he retracted that statement. But other than that, that's the only real conversation I've had with him.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling in, Keenan.
Thank you. Have a good one, Steve.
You too.
Jose.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going, Sid?
Good, Jose. How's it going, man?
All right, man. Listen, this is not really a question. This is more like a comment. I'm pissed with Vince, really, because you know how many times he had the opportunity to bring you back, and now I'm convinced it's not really him. It's more of his yes man and yes sir. You know, all these people that he has employed under him that are doing all this. You know, stalling. You know what I mean?
Well,
I want to tell you. Yeah.
Well, first of all, guys, and this is what we got to look at. The way I look at it, he's a businessman. I'm a businessman. You know, these are strategic games that people play, just like in real wars. This is just a mental war. You know, paper warfare, things like that. And you know, this is the way it's. You know, like years, and this goes back to Bruno. You know, Bruno used to send pictures of me and him and Vince and them back in those days, like once a week. And write letters to Pat all the time. And I said, hey, Bruno, stop. Don't do it on my behalf anymore because I don't want to look stupid. You know, and I don't want to look cocky, but I don't want to look stupid. You know, And meaning that is that, you know, these guys are smart people, man. And they know who you are before you know who you are. Really, they do. And especially today, it's so much easier to keep up with people. So I don't think it's other than just a timing thing. I don't think Vince or anybody else is his fault. It's just they plan things, guys, sometimes they used to. I think they still do, sometimes a year ahead. Now, they all fall in place? No, they don't. But they like, you know, for the good things to fall in place. So I hope to think that I'm a good thing. It would be something they want to take the time with and do right. And maybe that's it. That's what I'm hoping. That's something like that.
Right. Do you still follow WWE?
You know what? Honestly, right now is a basketball tournament, NCAA. That's all I'm watching right now.
Yeah.
Now, I have been watching a lot of these reruns on the AWA wrestling that comes on ESPN Classics.
Yeah, definitely.
And I watched those a little bit right before I picked up my son at football practice. And I've had a lot of fun watching those things because it's just a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. We had we watch them, too. And so I was looking to find some AWA
well,
guys.
If you watch them, let me ask you this. Who's got more TV time, Hogan or Colonel DePierce?
Oh, definitely.
Colonel DeBeers, man, must have been all over that damn TV, man. There's not a show that he's had on 17 times. He's more exposed than John Cena. Because that's just a joke.
Yeah. Colonel DeBeers never get a movie.
I know, that's what I'm saying. He's in everything. But no, no, Colonel DeBeers, man, he's still getting airtime.
Yeah, definitely. We had Larry Nelson on a couple months ago. It was pretty cool to track him down and get him on the show. Was there anything else, Jose?
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to say, Sid, listen, if WWE doesn't come calling by the end of the summer or the middle of the summer, if I were you, seriously, and that's just an opinion of mine, I'd say, man, go to, you know, call Jeff Jarrett or the Jarretts or whatever and join TNA or something, you know what I mean? Want to see you back in wrestling, man.
You know, I would be, guys, let me tell you something. I spent, you know, 7 goddamn years to get where I'm at right now. And, this is what it is that I just said it earlier that I'm into the big numbers and not just big numbers in front of people, but big paydays too. And but the big numbers are showing up and you know, that is more important to me than paydays. I got to, you know, if I can get a chance to do that, I swear I live and die for that right now. So that's what I want. I want that more than anything. And if I ever get a chance to talk to Vince, you know, one-on-one, I think he's going to hear my story. He's going to say, dude, you're hired. So I just I got what he wants, and I know what he needs, and I'm ready to do it. And I think that I just think that that's going to fall in place for me.
Mm-hmm. How did you get along with Vince like in the past? Your other runs?
You know, I feel like we get along good. I was always honest with him. You know, of course, I say the wrong things sometimes to people. Being honest, you know,
right.
Unfortunately, but I've learned not to be too honest, so it maybe hurts all the time. But I think. We both got respect for each other, though.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling in, Jose. Who do we got here? We got area code 781.
That's me.
All right. Who are you?
Hey, I'm Adam. I'm calling from Massachusetts.
Okay, cool.
Hey, I just wanted to know as one of the bigger wrestlers back in the early 90s, size wise, what Sid thought about the. Big guy wrestling nowadays with the Big Show and how they're getting used and if they could be used differently.
Well, you know, guys, you know, Big Show is, he's bigger than me. And really, with today's, well, in the last few years, there's not a lot of guys my size or Undertaker or Kane. But we're more available now than, say, our size used to really be something in those days. The Big Show and that other guy, there was a really big guys there, so I don't really fall in categories that anymore. I can work big, but I'm not as big, like, physical like those guys, so I wouldn't, I don't know a lot about those guys other than I've seen them. I think they worked their ass off. Big Show's got probably, to me, you know, the greatest attitude in the business I've ever seen for a big man. I haven't seen a lot of the other guys, so, but I think those guys really do a damn good job, and where you'd say those guys, you know, 10 years ago with the you'd tag those guys as being handicapped or handcuffed because of their size. But those guys
yeah.
really prove they're not, especially the Big Show. You know, he really
yeah.
shows, dude, man, he's he can be a baby face, he can be a heel, he's got great charisma for a big guy. Just, he's one of the best big guys I've ever seen.
Sometimes you don't realize how big he is because he can, like, take so many bumps and he can move
oh,
around.
Oh, he does. He's phenomenal, man. He's phenomenal. He really is.
And the other thing I was going to ask you is, you know, having worked with both Taker and Hogan in separate WrestleMania main events, who was the best, who did you like working with the most in a big match setting, whether it was WWE, WCW, whatever you were in?
It's a hard one to call. I'll tell you why. It's because you got two different characters. I worked with Mark so many more times than I did Hogan. Dad would probably say that I've enjoyed working with Mark more than Hogan, but and not to, you know, just basis business is fake. Mark is a lot more of a workhorse than Hogan. That makes it a little more fun for me. I like people like Mark, Vader, you know, the great Bam Bam Bigelow, who were workhorses, you know, the big guys like that really worked their asses off. Where, you know, with Hogan, it's a lot of fun, but it's a night off with Hogan. It's like working with one of the Three Stooges. But being that, I'd say probably The Undertaker.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling in,
Adam. Thanks for your time. Thanks for...
WrestleMania 13, was Undertaker's streak anything like anyone even talked about? Or like
you know what? I didn't even realize he had one. Yeah. I didn't even know anything about it. Really, till recently, because I just don't... This business is fake. We don't pay attention to things like that.
Right.
But no, I hadn't, and I hadn't thought about it. But it's something I've thought about now. Mm-hmm. Is it? You know, I saw his and Shawn's interview the other night. I realized it's going on. So I sort of know now that it is. I didn't really pay attention to it back then.
Mm-hmm. Zachary. Zach, do you have a question?
Zach's dozed off on this, guys.
Yeah, how does it feel to be a part of Undertaker's WrestleMania streak?
You know, if I was a big Mark and a Stooge, I'd say it was great, but it's just another match, guys. And it was the thing about it, too, is what takes a little glamour from that one, it was in a small venue there in Chicago instead of the United Center, so it just wasn't the WrestleMania I would remember.
From our message board, Wes from Delaware, he wants to know, did you enjoy working with Shawn Michaels for the WWF title, and would you want to work with him again?
You know, I've said the final stuff, I'd work with him any night. Of course, there's not many people I wouldn't work with, but just working with him is he's a workhorse in a different way. He works his ass off. He works his ass off, too. He really goes out of his way to make you really look as good as anyone can do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's flattering. That's, you know, it takes that pressure off. I don't have to ask for those things. You know, working with a guy like that, you know he's smart enough. He's going to come up with those things. And again, let's go back to AWA. He was educated for this business as well as anybody has been. So it's always going to be good working with someone like that.
Yeah. Somebody you see in the AWA once in a while when they're shown is Bruiser Brody. Did you ever work with him at all?
No, I didn't. I never saw him work live. I've seen some matches lately of him, but no, I haven't. I never did.
Yeah. Would that be somebody you would have liked to work with?
You know, I wouldn't.
There's some, you know, some people are different. Yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, watching him work, it's, you know, and I love John Norris. I wouldn't want to work with him either.
Right.
You know, it's just a struggle, it looks like. I've never worked with either one of them, so I can't say it wouldn't be, but, man, it just looks like a struggle.
Yeah.
I'd work with him.
Yeah. Not too long ago in AWA, they actually had a match. It was Vader versus Brody, but it was before Vader was Vader. So
Baby Bull.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool just to see that, just for like history's sake.
Well, now I've seen some of it. I haven't seen that match. I saw one other night that I thought was really great match. One of the best matches I've seen on AWA thing was John Norton, of all people, Colonel DeBeers, with a one arm tie behind their back match.
Right.
Man, that was one of the best matches I ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
But it had all those tapes, and we saw like three or four of them for the build up for that thing. And man, it was a damn good deal. Of course, in those days, they didn't put it together you just went out there and threw it together like a, you know, spray painting, just do ink against the wall, against the canvas, and hope it stuck. Mm-hmm. But that thing stuck, man. I watched it. It was good.
Area code 310.
Hi, that's me.
Yep. You have a name?
Hi, this is Joyce, calling from California. Hi, Sid.
Joyce, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Hey, thank you for giving us a shout-out earlier. That really made
You're
my
welcome.
Day.
You're welcome. Another Psycho Fanatic.
Yeah, Psycho Fanatic. Woohoo!
What you got going on tonight, George?
Nothing much. Just spending time with my daughters.
Good.
And
everybody,
I don't know if
hello.
Eric told you, but I had a baby and I named her after you.
He just told me that earlier. Joyce, I'm flattered by that. I really am. I'm just speechless over it, but it's something nice to know. I've had my niece who recently named her daughter after me too, Sydney, and I just love that. I really appreciate that, Joyce. Any questions you have tonight?
Well, it's a nice name. Well, I got a question. I know that you're into working out a lot, and you're obviously a hunting fan, but when you're not doing that, do you have any hobbies or any other businesses that you do? Like, how do you spend your time when you're not out hunting or working out?
You know, Joyce, I think sometimes we get this hunting deal. You got to realize that's the first time I've been hunting since my leg was broken. The time I went hunting before that was up with a deal that I did with WCW, the Buckmasters, which is a big deal. I don't really do a lot of hunting. I did when I was younger, but over the last few years, I don't even take a day off out of the gym to, this is going to sound really silly, but, you know, like last summer, and I have a big garden. I know it sounds weird, but I love gardening. I love stuff like that, and I didn't have one last year because I didn't want to take any time off to do anything other than do what I'm doing. And I've got a mission right now, and that mission is
right.
Stepping forward. And I'm going to have one this year, but it's not going to be one that's going to wear me out.
Wow, that's
great.
But I
don't do a lot of that.
I'm sorry. You still spend like 4 or 5 hours every day at the gym, and you still run?
Yeah, I do. Matter of fact, I got a real crazy regimen. And people see me, these guys see me in the gym, they're like, man, I live there. I go in the morning, 2 or 3 hours, I go back in the afternoon for 2 or 3 hours, and the guy would say this another day, he goes, man, why don't you just get it hot and stay over here in between workouts? But no, it's, I've got this workout thing down to a science, man. I really think that's why that I'm able to go as fast as I'm able to go and do the things I'm doing as a big person at this new stage in my life.
Yeah, no wonder you're in such great shape.
Right.
Do you have any special diet that you do?
I do. What is it? It's not a special diet. My diet's, you know, I've just adjusted my diet to all the different diets that are around right now. And, you know, it goes back way before Atkins did it. You know, the United States Olympic team did this high-protein diet a long time ago to compensate, you know, the influence of steroid use from German and European and Japanese and people like that were doing them. And it's really called, a long time ago, the caveman diet. I do a high protein
caveman diet.
Right, but I eat more fruits and vegetables than probably, you know, a tribe of monkeys. But I believe in that. Of course, I eat as many, you know, carbohydrates, but they're all good, you know, quality carbohydrates, like, you know, you know, fruits and vegetables and sweet potatoes and, you know, tons of things like that. But I compensate my calories, my carbohydrates for all my cardio and all the running I do. Now, right now, track season is starting. I do a lot of bleacher running. You know, I could run 16 bleachers in a row, you know, a solid hour. So, to me, running, I just really started running 100% last summer, that I really can feel that I can bust out 100 and just, you know, run into my own sweat.
Wow.
So it's right now, and I like running as much as I do weightlifting. And that's probably why I'm not as, you know, I'd probably be 360 pounds if I didn't run, you know.
Joyce
that
has a lot of
awesome.
Stuff going around in the back. Joyce has a lot of stuff going around in the back.
I know it.
I know.
Right, Joyce,
I got like the whole house here. Yeah. All right, thank you so much, Sid.
Thank you,
thanks
girl.
For going in.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Do you got a question there, Barb?
Definitely. I was just wondering if you have any specific memories of the angle on Raw where you beat up Shawn. Now, you were supposed to be a heel, but the entire crowd was cheering for you.
Right. You know, that, you know, what was your question again? I'm sorry.
It was about the angle on Raw.
You should have any memories about that?
Yeah, basically.
Well, the memory I do have about that is this. That right there, memory about that is this, is that there was, they were trying to force the people to buy something they didn't want to buy. Mm-hmm. You know, now, you push me as a heel and let me work with people like Sean and you know, everybody else that I worked with at that era. But you look at the deal at SummerSlam, you know, here it is. I got to be a dickhead for hitting an old Mexican in the head with a camera and then, you know, beating up a little guy like Sean. but yet they cheered me the whole way, because that's the Northeast, and that's where I really got a strong babyface, you know, following. So, other memories of that is that, yeah, I had a good time there, but, you know, they were trying to force something, trying to get Shine on him over at my expense, and it just wasn't going to work no matter how hard I tried. So that's the thing I remember about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you basically were pretty much the same character, like if you were a heel or a face, but what were, like, some little differences you would use in your character, like, you know, if you were being the face or you were being the heel?
Well, if I was being a baby face, the things you probably notice more in WCW, and this is something I was asked to do, and I try to do things they're asking me, is that, they succeed. We really want you to get there and fire up the people. So I'd be a little more interactive with the people. And that's probably the only difference. You know, other than that, I started working a little more, I call it silly. But other than that's about the only, and that was, I did try to lean that way a little bit to, the bookers at the time were Ed Ferraro and Vince Russo, and I'd been asked by Bill Bush, the head guy for WCW, and Turner to try to do what these guys wanted, and that's what I was trying to do.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of those guys, Vince Russo and Ed Ferraro?
I like Vince Russo and I like Ed Ferraro, but I think I think what they did speaks for itself. You know, I don't have to knock these guys to tell you guys what they ruined. But when these guys, you know, really everybody that was there thought that this deal was espionage. You know, that he was being sent by Vince to kill his territory.
Right.
Now, if you're not, and we know now that wasn't true, that he was really sent there, unless, you know, to keep this thing looking real. They're having a reason to make it look real. You know, so it's that's the thing. It's that's how bad they were. You know, that people really thought that they were in there infiltrating WCW to run a place of business. I don't think that was the case. I just think they led people on that they thought they knew.
Mm-hmm.
That simple.
Well, what was it like, when WCW closed up?
Well, I was home with a broken leg. I don't really have any thoughts of it. I was in shock in what my situation was, and I think that's why I don't really look at that. I don't know anything about it. It doesn't register to me because I had something else on my mind at that time, trying to figure out how the fuck I get out of this hole.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, everybody know to check out myspace.com/PsychoSidPromotions. We'll have the link right on the website. That's Eric's website. You can find out all about Sid. We got to plug those guys because they helped out the show a lot.
No, they are good guys, man. They really got a good library of stuff, and then they got, I talk to those guys, a couple of days a week, and they know what's going on, and we keep in touch with what's going on. They're always, putting up on stuff to the events I'm going to, so if anybody wants to know what I'm doing, you can go to that website, Psycho Sid Productions, and you can find out what's going on.
Definitely. Inchman.
Yeah, Brian Blaze from our message board, he has a question. He wants to know, what made you decide to work with ECW in 99?
Well, the thing was, is this. I'm looking for a platform always to, preach off of, and that was a perfect platform.
Mm-hmm.
To let the world see me in a small scale, somewhat, a lot larger, but somewhat the same as the NWA. I know Paul A. for a long time. Actually, I did my first gimmick, Lord Humongous. Started with Paul A. just for a few shots here in Memphis before I went down to Continental and did it with Bruno. It was a hell of a place to go to. I still believe until I was there that place really had a chance to do something. But once I got there a little bit and saw how things were going there, that I realized that they'd never make it big because they were too intent or too badly wanted to have the company always larger than the boys. They really have fans chant ECW than say, whoever. These guys were all nice to me. I don't have one argument with one guy in the place, right? So, but when you're pushing your top guys as Taz and he can't make it to WWF because he's too short, that tells you that, you're handcuffing yourself. If he had a lot to offer this business, he wouldn't be just announcing.
If ECW, if it would have been a little bit bigger, would have been in a place like you would have liked to have, like, a longer run?
Well, as I tell you what, it came really close for that to happen. Paul was really, and he got it pretty close for the money, to give me the money I needed. but not enough, though. And so, but no, I'm glad I didn't stay there because he never, you know, got
right,
his company
didn't pay the other guys,
know any
right.
bigger. So I would end up working for Vince anyway, which I want to do anyway. But it's just that particular time, you know, you're out there lobbying yourself. And man, Eric came across with, you know, deal of a lifetime, and I wouldn't have turned that down for nothing.
Mm-hmm. You know, earlier you mentioned Bam Bam Bigelow. Just wondering if you saw any of Bam Bam while he was in ECW, because I thought like he had some of his best matches. You know, in years.
He had some of his best matches there. I'm telling you, Bam Bam, man, one of the greatest workers in this business, man. He had a great mind for this business. He was a little bit, he was silly. He was known as a really big exaggerator in stories. Not a liar, but just exaggerator stories. Yeah. But when it came down to getting in that ring, guys, and as far as adjusting on the cuff, there was no one better than that guy.
Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of worker you were? That you know, you'd call stuff in the ring, or did you prefer
the
stuff?
You know, that's what makes job people crazy, because you got to realize I've worked with Lawler 1,000,000,000 times. You don't know the finish till you get in the ring sometimes, so. That's something I'm comfortable doing, and that puts a lot of people in an uncomfortable situation. But, no, I like it like that. Now, I think it's TV, and it's going to be something we need to have down to every little segment and everything. I think then you talk it out, you know. But it's a lot of fun to be able to do that on the cuff with people. And, you know, Bama, you get in the general idea of what you're doing, but, man, if things weren't going right, he was able to just pick up on it and change a couple of things and make it happen.
Yeah. Barbara, do you have a question?
Absolutely. One of our fans, Johnny Moxie, has a rather long question. I'm not going to read all of. Basically, he wants to know if you've seen the Four Horsemen DVD that WWE put out not too long ago.
No, I haven't. I'll be honest with you. They might have sent me one, but of course, I get sent some videos once in a while by people, but I don't always watch them. But no, I didn't see it. And I'll tell you real quick on that. You know, I was asked to do that thing, and I declined to do it. And the reason was is I told the guy that called me from the office is that, man, the things I want to do is, you know, a lot bigger than that. I don't water myself down before I ever get to the, you know, to the watering hole. You know, mm-hmm. I just didn't appeal to me to have done something like that. So, thing is too is I going up watching wrestling, the Four Horsemen, man, at that particular time would be great to be part of that. And I was part of it, and man, it was like a. You know, I marked out for it a little bit when I was doing it. So, I mean, I was probably thought I was the coolest guy in the world being the horseman when it happened. But it's something I look back on and say, man, that was one of the funnest days of my life doing that. But I just wouldn't, you know, the video wasn't being the horseman. It was just exposing what you'd done before. And for me to try to, what I want to do, I do want to have my first people see me in WWE doing a video like that.
Right, talking about stuff you used to do. When you said like you kind of marked out being part of the Horsemen, and why did like they take you out of the Horsemen?
Well, the thing was, I don't even remember. I think the night that happened, they just told me at TV. Now, I don't even remember when they took me out of it. I don't even know what the whole story was. It was how it happened and why it happened. Mm-hmm. But I was just put into it okay? I don't even remember how it happened and what about, but I'm sure they did that to me to put me in there to, you know, get what we call in this business, which I don't believe in, is called a rub. You get, you know, associated yourself with some people, which I think that really helped me. It doesn't work all the time, but that does help, you know, being part of something that, you know, people know that that's an institution, the Four Horsemen. So mm-hmm. you get involved or get that brand name to you, it can only help. So it was a good decision to do that, and I don't believe in it most times. But it was one there, so they got me catapulted to the next stage to where when I went ahead, and which I've always, everywhere I've been, is the only thing they ever had in mind for me is to just be a singles wrestler. So they put me in things like that, or put me into the skyscrapers for a reason, you know. So that was all I could say about that.
Yeah. I remember, I think it was a Halloween Havoc, and it was an angle with the fake Sting. It was Barry Windham. I was a big fan of that at the time. Did you like that angle?
That was the favorite thing I've ever done in my life. And the thing was, guys, I've told the story 100 times, is what it was, you know, pay-per-views were every 3 or 4 months at the time. So, you know, it'd be lots of TVs and, what you know, like American bashes or whatever to build up to things, or Clash of the Titan Champions or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So you have these builds to go to it, and you have all these interviews and all these weeks of TVs for one pay-per-view instead of just 1 month of pay-per-views, you know, for a pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. So I was told for 3 months, you know, I was going to be the next world champion. And to do all your interviews saying that that's what's going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that's what everybody thought was going to happen. And what had happened is that without anyone knowing, they pulled Barry Windham to the side and had him go home and lose weight. And no, I didn't pick up on it because this one thing is not my job, but I was thinking, you know, and then, so the deal was I was told in the dressing room, you know, I said, have your match, get your heat, set up to come back, stop stinging, go to the floor, throw him to the, you know, that door there, UIC Pavilion, and go back to the ring. Sting will come to the ring with his head down, roll him up, 1, 2, 3, you're the world champion. Mm-hmm. You know, so I said, sure, you know. Well, that's how it happened. Okay, I never knew that was Barry Windham.
I didn't know it at the time, but yeah.
Well, no one knew it, guys. Right. No one knew that. No one knew it. No one in the dressing room knew that. When it happened, I roll him up, I look down, it's Barry Windham. 1, 2, 3. I went, what the fuck? He said, you know, see a kid or something like that. And I'm just thinking, I'm thinking, what did they just do? So I said, I thought to myself real quick, I said, sure, what they'll do is they'll, in the next TVs, they'll just say that I beat the wrong Sting or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I got the belt, I got my back turned. And I didn't even know it to this point. I hear this loud roar. I look back in the ring, Sting's across the ring. The referee's grabbing the belt for me. He says, stay in the corner, take the Stinger splash, 1, 2, 3. I said, shit, I was world champion for like 15 seconds. But it was good, you know. But it was, that, to me, that night meant more to me than any night in my life, because I was part of something that was that cool. You know, that was my, maybe the best night for me, one of the best nights in the business for me. It wasn't I don't remember what the match was, how great it was. It probably wasn't great with it. It's just the finish, man. That finish, I'll just remember that.
Sane Shane from our message board, he has a question. He wants to know, what entrance music did you prefer making your entrance to? The WCW one or the Psycho Sid one in WWF?
You know, Psycho Sid one or what now?
The WCW entrance
WCW,
music.
WCW, that's what I was thinking. Say. Mm-hmm. Now, as we were the Skyscrapers, WCW, I enjoyed it the best because it was the best music, but it was a tape they couldn't use today. It was one of the Scorpion songs. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason that one would be better than the rest of them.
Oh, definitely. You got the Scorpions doing your entrance. That's
exactly. So as far as intro music, that was the best one.
Yeah.
Barbie?
Yeah. Afro in the chat room wants to know if you've seen the movie The Wrestler.
No, I haven't. I just got the DVD the other day from a friend of mine and left it at his house. So I haven't seen it, but I want to watch it. I've seen the trailers to it. Unfortunately, the trailers didn't excite me enough to watch it and go out and get it immediately. Mm-hmm. But now, you got to realize, I said earlier tonight that I love the small stage, and that right there was the small stage for what I saw the guy was trying to come back to. And that's what interests me. I want to see that because it looks like those little shows we used to do. So I will watch it, but just haven't had time to. Mm-hmm. Big fan of Mickey York, though.
Oh, yeah. We had his trainer on the other week, or this week, Alpha, the Wild Samoan.
Right.
We get a lot of people calling in who already called in. You can't just keep calling in. You call in once, you have a question for Sid. That's enough. But I was just wondering, you know, today they say almost all the promos are scripted. Now, would you be, comfortable with that, or were you a guy that, you know, preferred to do your own? Or?
My thing is this. One of the better interviews I did before, and it wasn't a long one, was when it was handed me to Vince, that I really thought it was, you know, really thought out well, and it was something I think that really, at the time, it was a perfect interview for the right time for that show, and it was leading up to the big show at the Alamo Dome with me and Sean, is where I was in that empty arena, and I pretty much did word for word what Vince set out. Now, if they were that good all the time, I'd, you know, sit back and let them do those all the time, but I had the luxury of, because I keep up a lot of interview material myself. It's something I'm prepared with. I'm always going to be prepared with, and I think anybody knows me, even Vince would say, you know, this guy knows his interview. So they let me, they look, had me look at one. So do you like this or what do you think? And if I had one better, they let me do mine. But, you know, if you can cut, you know, man, I'm telling you, that was to me one of the better interviews I did, and it was laid out perfect. So if they come up with things like that, I'd say that would, you know, they do that job and do, you know, that's why I let them do it. But I think a lot of times myself will have something good to say too, so, and I think they'll listen to it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're aware of the Hall of Fame is this weekend. Do you follow that, the WWE Hall of Fame?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't.
One of the guys was being inducted is Bill Watts. I don't know if you ever had a chance to work with him. Maybe didn't.
Well, I just a short stint, man. I've got, man, a lot of respect for Bill Watts. I think he's one of the smartest guys in this business, too, right there in the top 10 of all the smartest people in this business. I learned a lot from the guys as far as watching him and how he did things. And I used some of those same deals in my matches today. So I think he's a really smart guy. He's a great, as far as like creating heels and stuff. I don't think there could probably be many better people other than Ole Anderson than he is at making a heel. So that's why I like those guys like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Who would you say like helped you the most to like learn to work as a big man?
Well, you know, I had a lot of people. Man, you gotta realize in WCW I had so many people I could go to. I had Ole Anderson, I had Bill Watts, I had Blackjack Mulligan, I had Yahoo McDaniels, I had God, it just goes on and on, you know. So I got a lot of input all the time on how to make this character, you know, rough, tough, and mean. So there were so many guys that added to it, but the one guy that probably really taught me things how to say in a tag match, just to cut off the ring and make the people work a match to a certain point that you can make the people feel suffocated, like you're trying to make the guy look suffocated. And if you could do that, then people, when you do get that tag, they'll be happy it happens. And so Ole taught me some of those things the best for things like that.
Mm-hmm. Ole's definitely a guy, like some people, say a lot of good things about him, and some people don't like him at all. But you seem like somebody who's, you got along
with
him.
Well, the thing is this, and I don't know who said this, but the thing about Ole is this. If you're a type of person that doesn't want to know the truth, then you don't like Ole Anderson, okay? Now, I'm so happy. I'm one of these guys that, I love working under Ole Anderson or Bill Watts or guys like that are, you know, authoritative, you know. Mm-hmm. When they call me dumb motherfucker and this and that, I don't take it to heart, you know. I just know their way of letting you know you didn't do good right then. A lot of people took it just too personal. And I just think those people are probably the ones that don't give you a really good read for people like that because they didn't see eye to eye with them. I think if you look what those guys did and some of the products they made and some of the people they produced, you can't argue what they've done.
Yeah, we meet Ole every year at the NWA Fan Fest in Charlotte, and I think he's one of the funniest guys I've ever met.
Oh, he's a funny son of a bitch, man. He loves his business, guys. He loves teaching. He loves to see someone. He loves to see that he would be able to pass something on that could help someone else. And he maybe likes it too much, and too much of a passion when it comes across sometimes is the wrong way.
Yeah. I always heard, you know, a lot of people said bad stuff about him, and every year he sits down in the lobby in the hotel and talks with the fans for 6 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's just a really nice guy, really.
He is a good guy, man.
You said earlier about Bischoff. Now, we've had him on a few times, and he's, you know, talked about starting his own promotion, him and Hogan, and I don't know if it's ever going to start up or not, but if, like, they did do that, would that be something you'd be interested in?
Well, anything Eric would do, you'd have to look at it because, you know, guy's got a great mind and great pizzazz for the business, but probably not. Because what they're probably going to try to do it would be take too long. I don't have 20 years to see the business get on top again, which Vince is, you know, again, just the perfect place for me.
Mm-hmm. Now, if something like a startup promotion like that, if they ask you to be part of it as like the creative side, would that be something you'd be interested in?
Now, that's something I'd jump into right away. If they say, we're going to have you come in to work, but we're also going to work the creative side, and if that and other things would sort of line up, that would be enough to, you know, say, okay, I'll try this. You know, say, I feel like I've, you know, reached the end of the deal, talking with Vince, and I didn't think things was going to work out, and this thing would come across, and everything was perfect, and I would probably do something like that.
We got two more callers, so we'll get to them quick. We got Carol.
Hey, what's going on, Sid?
Hey, man, how's it going tonight?
Oh, real good. Hey, listen, I just got two things I want to tell you. I felt sorry for you about a couple years back ago when you broke your leg.
Yeah.
Is your leg healed up better than it was?
It's weird you ask that because now I have 17 legs. How that happened, I don't know. So, yeah, it has gotten better. I can, like, run 17 times now.
Was it the pay-per-view called WCW Sin?
I don't even remember that.
That's one you want to forget, right?
No, it's not that I want to forget it. It's honestly, I just don't remember it.
Yeah.
Those pay-per-views come by with so many different names, you know.
That's true.
It was just like watching Dog the Bounty Hunter. I don't remember them, you know.
Uh-huh.
It'd be like asking you, what happened so the Dog the Bounty Hunter didn't cry or smoke a cigarette? I couldn't tell you. Little wimp.
I don't know if they told you, but I'm related to the Crockett's, Jackie Crockett.
Nobody holds that against you. If you were related to a cameraman.
That's right. But, I really felt sorry for you because I was watching it on YouTube not too long ago. And they showed how you, when you jumped off that top rope, I was just like, oh my gosh. I felt your pain. I mean, I was like, I wanted to help you, but I couldn't get there, you know?
I'm going to tell you what, I really appreciate comments. You know, I really do because, I get some comments once in a while. And had a guy tell me one time, man, you know, I saw a shooting star the other night, and I wished that I made him that you would make it back. And then had some fans send me in some stuff the other day. I was trying to get it where I could get the guy's name and give him a shout out to him, but couldn't find it. The guy's from Buffalo, Niagara Falls. He sends me some pictures and stuff to sign. Really nice letter, saying some nice things like you're saying right there. And then sent me $25 for payment for the signing the pictures because I sent his money back to him. But those things like that, guys, when I wake up or had a bad day or my ankle hurts a little bit, I can say, fuck that and move on, you know, because it just helps me. Things like that just makes me get to my goal a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that comment.
When you were rehabbing the leg, did that give you time to, if you had any other nagging injuries, did they heal up?
No, it does do a lot of things for you, this kind of time off. It gives me time to let my brain rest, and then I can think of things fresh. I can think of things, and I sit back and look at things from a different perspective when the business. I can look at things, when you think of ideas and stuff like that, you're talking about the creative side. I know some things I'd like to do, and I know these things are right. You know, that's what it gives you. I think that's the good thing about it. The only thing is good about time off is, you know, it gives you time to build up, you know, material for interviews. Where I don't need 7 fucking years to do that.
Right.
7 hours have been sufficient. But but that's the thing is that I don't give up. I don't quit. And so I'm going to make this thing, guys. I'm going to make it back.
Mm-hmm. Well, we hope to see you back.
I will be.
Yeah, I saw you live for the NWA last year.
Yeah, those were pretty good shows. You know, some of them were
pretty big crowd.
It's just that, it's sometimes I felt like I was in the middle of a scam. You know, like one time in Oklahoma, I was going to the building. They called before I got there, so don't show up. Now they said because of the stringent commission and stuff that they couldn't even do the show, and I didn't say to them, but I said, say, guys, you know this business. You know, Oklahoma's like Missouri. The athletic commission is almost as stringent as New York. You got to have all these things, and they didn't want to pay for all these things, and it just, you know, it's just like you figured they got this deal where, and I don't know if TNA uses the same thing, but I'm sure they do because, you know, Dave Marquez worked with them. You know, they go to these buildings, say, for instance, like how NWA got to Phillips Arena in Atlanta. Was they went to them and said, you give us Phillips Arena so much money, we'll buy you wrestlers and a card and matches. So So some of those places, like there it worked, and some other places worked, and then they went to some places, these big mills, and they had 100 people there. Where they get the money, but they don't care. They don't come back. So they do the places that do work, come back the second time or the third time, and then I hadn't heard anything about them in a long time, so we don't know if they're still going, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah. You mentioned Dave Marquez, and I don't know if this ever got to you or not, but somebody who knows Dave Marquez told me that he came up with an idea for you where you'd be like, you were frozen or something, and then you get you like thawed out for your return.
No.
It was very bizarre.
No. Right. I don't think those guys are really nice guys, and I think they're a group of guys that are trying really, really hard. But they know them, have a lot of sense of the business. I think Dave Marquez reminds me of Spanish American version of Paul Lee. You know, I swear, but he's a little cleaner, a little more educated than Paul Lee.
I said not as edgy.
But you know, that's sort of the deal. There, it's like, man, you don't know that this guy's taking your shirt when you leave your room. You know, you got to look for your wallet. Man, this guy talks too smooth, man. I feel like I've been gone to prison and raped after a conversation with the guy. But Paul Lee, Paul Lee was a nasty little dude, never showered and stuff, you know, so.
That added to his charm, I think.
And he really started not taking showers there at the end. And that sort of gives you that dirty version of him, you know. So I think that's why I give Dave Marquez the upper swing on him. Deodorant, toothpaste, what do you call those things?
Hygiene. Yeah, hygiene. Exactly.
Hygiene. Yeah, the hygiene level, Dave Marquez is like a day ahead of Paul Lee.
Well, I don't think you compliment the man anyway.
No, of course I do.
Carol, did you have anything else?
Yeah, just one more thing. Sid, when I watched you on TV a long time ago, even when you were in WCW and the NWA and the WWF, you were to me, you're an awesome person.
I appreciate you, Carol.
You paid, all you wrestlers have paved the way for the young talent, but the young talent really don't know sometimes what they're doing, and they don't, it seems to me they don't appreciate it because of what y'all have done.
Well, I think some of the guys, I think Carol, not to cut you off, I think you're right about that at some point, and I think you're wrong, but I think a lot of those guys do appreciate it. I don't think they don't know, but they're paying the rate right now for the future of those guys that will come after them, so I think we all do it. Some of us do it not knowingly. I didn't know I was really paving the way for anyone, but I think I did a few things differently, and people are starting to do them today. But other than that, I don't really see that being like that big of a deal. You know, like I don't see those guys doing that bad of a job. I think they're all working their ass off right now. It's just you got to realize those young guys that have to be told what to do or give some idea of how to do it, and those guys are doing, I'm sure, the best they can at their ability, and things are being laid out to them step for step for step. And they're doing it step for step for step. You can't blame them. You can only blame the guys that are handing them the material.
And, you said about coming up through the territories in Memphis and other territories. Those aren't around anymore for people to learn from. They pretty much come from wrestling school right to the WWE.
Right.
Well, anyway, thanks for calling in, Carol.
Yeah, Carol.
Already.
And next time you call, have a man's name.
Well,
but thank you.
Oops, I hung up on in mid-sentence. Sorry about that, Carol.
That's all right.
John?
That's all right. It's a good cutoff. I don't want to be showed up on, talk radio by a guy named Carol. You guys trying to make me look bad?
Oh, man.
It was like that famine punch Lawler gave me the other night at the Minglewood Auditorium. I took a bump on my ass before he ever touched me.
What's it like working with Jerry Lawler?
It's like working with like a skeleton out of the closet, just slow, he's already dead, it doesn't matter. No, I'm going to tell you something, guys. It's a good, that's where, I've said this before, is that what we have to, as workers in this business, we have to learn how to be comfortable in an uncomfortable situation. And one of them sometimes is, the longest time means I can make someone feel uncomfortable by not moving. Mm-hmm. I feel real comfortable by not moving. I'm not going to let people or, you know, whatever the match before me or whatever dictate how fast I'm going to move in the ring. And I think King has given me what you don't see with many people today. I've got a calm about me that you just don't see. And where I got that from is from him, honestly. I got my, you know, a lot of the on-cuff interview stuff, the ability to do that. You know, you got to realize in these interviews in the day, we had to do these things on the fly. And it's live TV. So you know, that's something he taught me how to do, too, and he's one of the best at it. So I learned a lot from the guy. And that right there, that one thing in my repertoire means a lot to me, just to be able to make someone feel uncomfortable, or I can feel comfortable in an uncomfortable situation.
Jai is the last caller here.
Hi, Sid. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Jai?
I'm okay. I met you when I was like 12 at the Cape Cod Melody tent. I loved it. It was like one of my first memories of going to a live event.
Right.
So I just went to wrestling school in Atlanta, Georgia. They teach you how not to be stiff. I've heard rumors that you are stiff. Do you think it's good to be stiff or not?
Well, I think for me it's good to be stiff, but not for me to be stiff. Get it?
Because
when I work with you, I'll stiff you, but don't stiff me. No, that's something, guys, that I really learned from. Believe it or not, we talked about Bruiser Brody earlier. You know, when I went to Japan, this is after his death, you know, New Japan was, you know, they brought me in 6 weeks early to show me tapes and tapes of Bruiser Brody. And I've got some Bruiser Brody in my character. And it's that deal of I like to keep things, you know, I like for it to look believable. And it is believable because I'm really touching people pretty good. And I don't mind to be touched good myself. You know, I don't mind it. So some things, and that's something else we've learned from Lawler Damage, that, you know, you hit some, you know, just it better be laid in and not, you know, didn't lay in at all. Mm-hmm. So, no, I like it stiff. I like it tight, you know, so that'd be the answer.
Still throws one of the best punches, Jerry Lawler.
Well, I think Jerry Lawler throws a good one. It's almost too damn good. he throws a good one.
I always like Funk's.
Funk show throws a good one. Shawn Michaels throws a good one. Mm-hmm. He throws good punches with his feet, too. They're good. They're not there. They don't kill you. You know, so throw a boot like Shawn throws is a lot harder than throwing a hand, so I had to give him that.
Yeah. Jai, when he mentioned he was at wrestling school, he was, I think he was trained by Big Cat. What's his name? Mr.
Hughes.
Hughes.
Yeah. Well, get your money back, okay? Because you're not going to make it if you learn from him. No, I'm just kidding. No, Mr. Hughes, he's a good guy. I'm sure you'll go far. No, I'm kidding. guys, that's why they call me Scapel. I cut right through the bullshit. I'm sure that's going to be my new name from now on. I have a friend of mine break in, or just got out of wrestling school today a few months ago. He asked me the other night on the phone if he thinks he's ever going to make it. He's a good friend of mine. I said, no, he's not going to make it. The reason why it's not really him or anybody else today. It's just it's harder for, you know, now saying that I don't know what the dude looks like, but Balls Mahoney could get a job. So anybody can make it in this business, and Balls Mahoney is a great example of that. But is it going to be a little harder for Balls Mahoney people to get jobs? Yeah, you know, so mm-hmm. And it's going to be hard for him, you know, people built like myself to get jobs today. You're going to have to really be special. It's just, with it be limited places to work, you know, real places that we know of, I do believe this. I believe there's a chance right now for some of these smaller territories to get going again to a point they could be somewhat respectable and not be called independents anymore. Mm-hmm. Will it happen? I doubt it. Is it possible? Yes.
What do you think they'd have to do? Do you think, you know, not try to beat WWE is just, you know, try to be successful on their own?
I think what they'd have to do is take on some concepts. You know, this is something I'll throw out there real quick. Is I We talked about Dog the Bounty Hunter. Let's use USC, for example. Let's use Anthony Bourdain, Andrew Zimmerman, all these reality shows that, if you look at what they do, they got a great following with showing more damn repeats of old shows than anybody they know. I think what you have to do is you have to learn how to put out a good product out there, but most inexpensive way of doing it, and that is showing good repeats. Or can you show, you know, long repeats, you know, 30-minute matches? No, that'd have to be something, mean something. And for instance, what UFC does, you know, like when they get ready for, you know, they start educating you, they'll just start showing old matches of Chuck Liddell. And then before you know it, pretty soon you're going to see him in a pay-per-view. You know, you'll have to show new stuff. So not saying that that's what wrestling have to go to. That's something Vincent and I have to think about later if things getting worse. That, you know, instead of doing all these shows, taping all these shows at one night, killing all these crowds, you know, show one and just, you know, like, I'm just looking at the show here for Memphis SmackDown. It's on a paid programming channel here. So if you own a channel that bad, don't put so much time into it. I'm sure not all the stations are like that. But, and if it costs, and if the business is bad, as they're saying, and they're looking ways to cut back costs, you might look at some one of your shows being like that, you know. And then maybe the smaller territories will look at doing that too. How can you get, say, mainstream in a small area, say, like this, let's just use Memphis, if they try to get Tennessee and Mississippi and, say, Kentucky going again or something like that, they'd have to think of doing something like that. That's what I think they'd have to do, something like that.
Yeah. Eric, you're in the chat room. Yes, a couple times, I believe. I wonder if you had any Iron Sheik stories.
Man, not that I do, I'll probably end up going to jail. I don't know if I want to put myself out there.
Yeah, I'm surprised he's never been in jail if he acts like he does in real life.
Dude, the dude is crazy, man. Now, I'm telling you something. I've never had a better workout partner in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Man, the guy is a machine, or used to be. He's just a fucking machine. He is crazy, you know, but I don't want to go into these old stories. I don't. I might start crying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we want to thank you for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thanks, guy.
Anything you want to tell everybody out there?
Man, I like to tell everybody out, you know, from years ago, people helping me, you know, carry my gym bag into the gym for me when I was on a walker and crutches, and until today, people calling me, giving me, you know, writing me letters, talking about how, I just want to thank all the people for my support up to this point. And I don't want to sound corny about that, but man, that's the one thing I look at and I really appreciate more at this point in my life and my whole time is just, you know, people calling and worried and concerned about what I'm doing, and people send me all these good comments, like, you know, the people tonight. You know, guys, we look back, and I don't put myself over real quick, but most people tonight said, Sid, you're the greatest, you're the best. When you get that 99% of the time you hear from people, you know you did something good in this business. And I like to say thanks to all those people.